Grace, mercy, and peace to you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I am so pleased to get to be with you. I am grateful to the committee and to your pastors, and I am glad for this chance we have to think about our faith together. Parables are designed to interrupt what we thought was settled. And this parable today is so obvious and so well known that my task is simply to remind you of what we already know. And your task is to decide, if you want to, whether you would like to have your life interrupted about the things that you long have settled. The verses we skipped over since the reading last Sunday, because the lectionary didn't want us to see anything bad in the text, says that this parable is addressed to the Pharisees, who are the lovers of money. That means lovers of money. They thought they could secure their own future and be self-sufficient, which probably means they were very anxious about not having enough, which probably means that they were preoccupied with themselves and didn't notice anybody else. So the parable is addressed to self-sufficient people who are anxious and who don't notice anybody else. And that's the only ones this is for. Everybody else can leave. But we are invited to think again. As you know, the parable is about the wealth gap that is so obvious and growing among us. This wealth gap between verse 1 and verse 2. Verse 1 says there was a rich man who ate sumptuously every day. Why shouldn't he? He was rich. And in verse 2, there was a poor man whose body was covered with sores. He had very bad health coverage. And he was hungry, hoping for a little scrap food. The parable concerns the future of the rich man who ate well and dressed well, and the future of the poor man who had bodily sores. The rich man thought he was secure forever, and the poor man probably thought he would be miserable forever. And they both died, and they were both surprised. The poor man was surprised because he got picked up by angels and was welcomed into the presence of Abraham. The rich man died and was surprised because he ended up in a place of torment. He reminds me of William Paley, the owner of CBS, who was this very arrogant man. It is said that he was the only person whose will began, "If I die." The parable is to say that we are choosing our futures, and our futures are not going to be a continuation of what we presently have. So Jesus tells a parable to the lovers of money that is concerned with people who are disregarded by the lovers of money. Think about the crafting of such a parable. How would you tell a story that concerns both lovers of money and people who are left behind at the same time? And Jesus does it by showing us how agile he is about the Old Testament traditions that he has studied. He doesn't spend much time on the poor man because he wants to address the rich man. All it says about the poor man is that the angels carried him to the bosom of Abraham. And he is welcomed by Father Abraham, the guy that we know from the book of Genesis as a figure of grace and generosity and even passion for justice. Abraham in the Old Testament is the carrier of God's unconditional grace for Israel and for the world. And now this unconditional grace is extended to the poor man who never qualified for love. He probably didn't show up regularly for work. He probably didn't pay taxes. He probably wasn't productive in any way. He probably depended on free stuff paid for by other people. You know that he was a loser. But the news is that Father Abraham didn't care. He didn't ask him any questions. He simply recognized the poor man as one of his own and welcomed. Who knew? Who would have believed it? Who would have thought that this social loser would have a future in the bosom of Father Abraham? Well, Jesus knew because he had read the Old Testament. Oh, we are told one other thing about the poor man. He had a name. His name was Lazarus. He was known and recognized and identified. He is not a nameless, homeless person. He has an abiding identity. Jesus spends much more time on the rich man because he stands in for all lovers of money, and it is amazing that he has no name. The tradition has given him a name, but not Jesus. And I think he doesn't have a name because all lovers of money act roughly the same way. So he probably had an elaborate funeral. He may have had a big fancy mausoleum. But he was tormented. Who knew? Who would have thought it? One would have expected that he had long-term health coverage that would see him through. But his good food and his fine clothes weren't worth anything, and his future could not be built on his fabulous present. And in his torment, Jesus says, he could see Father Abraham afar off, but he couldn't get close to Abraham. He is not welcomed by Abraham. He is not embraced. And to make it worse, he could see Lazarus in the embrace of Abraham. He must have thought, can you imagine that? This nobody welcomed, and I am excluded. But the rich man is accustomed to having what he wants when he wants it. The poor man never asks for anything. He never speaks. But the rich man is used to being an advocate, so he says, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. That's an imperative. Send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames. He still imagines that he is an entitled guy, and he imagines that he can command Lazarus. Go get some water for me, boy. He had never given Lazarus the time of day, but he now expects Lazarus to obey him. Let him comfort me, let him cool my tongue the way my mother used to do when I had a high fever. Abraham responds. He addresses him as child. Well, before we got fancy, he addressed him as son, my son. Remember that during your lifetime, you received good things and Lazarus in like manner, evil things. You had all the good stuff, and Lazarus got nothing but trouble. But all that is now reversed. He is comforted. You have agony. So this parable is about choosing futures that will reverse our present tense. He just says, tough luck. And Abraham asserts that that's all settled long term. Nothing will change because there is a great chasm between us and you cannot get from there to here. You will not be welcomed. But as a fallback, the rich man makes a second request. If you can't rescue me, send Lazarus, he hadn't learned anything, send Lazarus to my brothers that they can not be as selfish as I have been and choose a better future. He still imagines that he can recruit Lazarus, the poor man, to be his errand boy. But Abraham will have none of it. And Abraham says dismissively, your brothers have got Moses. They have the prophets. They have the Torah and the prophets and the commandments of Mount Sinai. And they know what to do, even as you knew what to do. And that's all they're going to get. Jesus not only knows the Abraham tradition, Jesus knows the Moses tradition. And what he knows is that the Moses tradition is uncompromising and hard-nosed, and it's a call to obedience. All that is on offer for the lovers of money is a radical call to obedience. And in response to this, the rich man can think of nothing else to say. So the parable ends. Now, notice what Jesus has done. Jesus understands the key tension in the Old Testament between Abraham and Moses. They don't really fit together. Both of them are biblical, but the Abraham tradition is about free, gracious, unconditional love. And the Moses tradition is an announcement that you better get your ass in gear. The fine art of interpretation is to see who gets what from the Bible. Our usual way of thinking, maybe not Baptists, but the rest of us, our usual way of thinking is that God's unconditional love in Abraham is for blessed, well-off, successful people like us. And the hard demand of Moses is for the losers who, if they would shape up, they'd be like us. But Jesus reverses things. He imagines that Abraham's unconditional love is for the poor and the undeserving, and he assigns Moses to the rich man who is not used to obeying anyone or anything. So the parable poses the question, what part of the biblical tradition do you think pertains to you or to us? When is it the gospel of unconditional love? And when is it the gospel of uncompromising obedience? Because both are good news. It's the way it is in Psalm 146. Did you notice all this about the goodness and generosity of God? The Lord sets, the psalm sounds like a political campaign, keeps repeating the name of the candidate. The Lord sets the prisoners free. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bound. Now the Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the strangers. The Lord upholds orphans and the widow. It's all good. The Lord does good things for prisoners and blind people and bowed down and immigrants and orphans and widows. He does wonderful things for the disabled and the disadvantaged and the undeserving, all of whom are more or less like Lazarus. But did you notice this little footnote in verse 9, which many churches leave out, so we left it in, but the way of the wicked he brings to ruin. Just a half verse. The wicked are those who do not serve the common good, those who act in greedy, selfish, cynical ways. They will come to ruin. Thus the tension in the psalm is the same as in the parable. God's unconditional love is for the unqualified, and the requirements of obedience are for the well-off who are filled with self-regard. And mostly we have learned to misread the Bible about that matter. So what if the parable were addressed to our national economy? Everyone knows about the gap of wealth and poverty. Everyone knows that the gap is not an accident, but to use one of Donald Trump's favorite words, it's rigged. It's rigged by tax laws and payday loans and minimum wage and the whole history of slavery. Everybody knows that. And everyone assumed, till we thought about it, that the poverty class is fated while the entitled class goes from strength to strength. Everyone knows that, and so we hustle in a variety of ways. But that's all interrupted here. The parable is a counter-read of our socioeconomic reality. In the long run, all lovers of money will die not well off, and in the long run, the poor with bodily sores will get Abraham. Or if we read it as we now must in light of Charlotte and Tulsa and a thousand other deaths like that, everyone knows about white entitlement and black vulnerability. And the gospel is about Abraham and about Moses. And we, who are children of this text, can see that this parable is not about some imagined long-term future, but it's about now. It's about hunger and bodily sores and being left behind and violence, and about the abyss between the entitled and the vulnerable, between the haves and the have-nots. And because we are children of this text, we are not fooled by the ideology or the propaganda or the advertising of consumer self-indulgence. We are not fooled by the claim that more will make us happy or will make us safe, because we know better. And we know better that the way of the wicked he will bring to ruin. So we are not fooled by the long-term claim of white entitlement in the midst of black vulnerability. But here's the escape hatch. It's just a parable. It's just a story. He just made it up. You don't have to linger over it. But we might pray for each other that we'll be haunted for a while by this story. Parables are for thinking again about what we thought was settled. And what we do know is that the present arrangement between the rich man and Lazarus is not sustainable. We can see it before our very eyes coming to ruin. The The news is that the God of great reversals is at work. So I have wondered, being discomfited by this story, I wonder what the rich man should have done. Don't you?